Good morning, and welcome to the class on procedures for managing a multi-grade classroom. I'd often start my classroom, the 1 year, with God is good all the time. All the time, God is good. So I'd like you to answer me. God is good?
All the time.
All the time.
God is good.
Does anybody know where the world's smallest official park is?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Very good. It is the size of that square over there, 24 inches square. And if you're interested in it, you'll have to dig in deeper. Which president discovered he was dying of a kidney disease within the first year of his office? But, like presidents do, they kept it quiet. It was the 21st president, Chester A. Arthur. He lived another 5 years after that. So welcome back to those who are following this novice teacher's track. I think I see some new faces here, but a lot of familiar ones. Welcome back. God has given us procedures. 1 Corinthians 14:40 says, "Let all things be done decently and in order." He was referring to a congregational context of in church, but I believe that principle goes much further. God is a God of decency and order. Where you see God at work, you see things being restored back to decency and order. God gave the Israelites a lot of specific instructions, you could call them procedures, on how to deal with sin, on how to worship Him. And in the New Testament, we see that as "let all things be done decently and in order," He is affirming that again. Does the word "managing" scare you? Procedures? Does it sound like something foreign that, okay, I'm a teacher, now I got to figure out managing and procedures? You're going to be forced to manage in a way that possibly you haven't been forced to do so yet. You have school starting at 9 o'clock. I'm following my schedule. Devotions ends at 9:25, then you have Bible memory till 9:35, then you have math class at 9:45, and then you have recess at 10:30. And so your day goes every day, very, very managed. For those that are at home or at a mini barn shop or on the construction site, we don't tend to manage our day quite that detailed. So I would like to look at procedures today in a very practical way, just to give you a little perspective of what a day at school could look like. And if you get overloaded, that's kind of the goal here today, is just give you everything, overload you, stretch your brain, get you equipped for the stretching first months. Take your papers, fill them out, take them, and then use them as a little quick sheet throughout your school year as you get engaged. Back in 1989, there was a 747, a double-decker airliner, headed from Amsterdam to Alaska. The pilot was in conversation with the ground crew, and the ground crew warned him that there's a volcano in the area. And he asked the pilot, "Do you see the ash cloud?" And the pilot says, "Well, I see a cloud. It looks maybe a little darker than a cloud, but I'm not sure. I can't really tell." And soon the ground control got word that the pilot had flown into this cloud, and suddenly the cockpit began filling up with acrid smoke and debris, and the pilot realized, "We flew into this ash cloud." So he requested clearance up to 39,000 feet from 25,000, applied full power to all his engines, and began a climb out to get above the cloud. About 10 seconds later, they heard a sound that every single passenger and the pilots will remember forever. All four engines went silent. And they began something that a 747 is not designed for. It became a glider. Can you imagine that feeling as you're falling nearly, not quite free fall. They can glide fairly decently. But it's a very steep slope, and as they began their fall, passengers began screaming, throwing up, panic, chaos. Stewardesses were screaming to put on the seat belts, part of their procedure to follow. They fell for about 14,000 feet. I think they leveled out at about 2 miles above the ground then. Those pilots, in the moment of that chaos and that confusion and the reality that 747s don't land on the ground and stay in one piece, especially in the mountainous Alaska territory. And yet, what I want to highlight in that story is, through that descent, the pilots, they brought out their procedure books, laid out their procedure books here, and said, what do we do now? Procedure one, we need to flip our electrical system over to standby. We need to keep flying. Step two, let's get these, try restarting these engines. And for 5 or 6 minutes, they kept attempting. Restart, 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 and restart. And finally, the debris in the engine dislodged enough through the cold air blowing through that they were able to restart all engines and land. Hopefully, you don't ever get in that situation in your classroom where you have 2 days before things fly to pieces. But that is an illustration of when you run into some situations, you have this. This is what we do. This is what we do. And sometimes that daily routine is what helps keep things flowing and keeping you going. Make it one of your goals this year to learn to manage time. Pray daily for wisdom. Observe people around you. Learn from them and ask questions and make necessary adjustments throughout your day. Most of all, remember James 1:5, that if you need wisdom, God is there. He will give it to you. There's no situation that God has called you to that He will not enable you in some way to meet the challenge if you are willing to call out to Him. Do you use procedures? I hope you do. Do you wake up at a certain time every morning? That's a procedure. Real basic, nothing scary. Right along with procedures runs the word discipline. If you feel stepped on today, take it as an aim at the heart and not at your toe. But we must have self-discipline as teachers. Without self-discipline, our classrooms will be chaotic. One of the fruits of the Spirit is temperance, self-control, being able to say no to our selfish desires and allowing God to use us. Being responsible. This concept must be emphasized. A teacher must be temperate. How long we sleep at night, how we spend our money, what time we go to bed, whether we're to church on time, our social life. A list could go on and on, but are we being temperate? That is going to play a huge factor in this role of temperance. Remember, as a teacher, you must be a representative of Christ. Otherwise, it is not a Christian school. While we're on the topic, let's talk about personal holiness for a little bit. How do procedures and holiness go hand in hand? Procedures are in place to attain to a goal. If all our goal is something very tangible, something tomorrow, maybe we're going camping, we need to pack up. Personal holiness doesn't really enter that picture. Anybody can prepare for a camping trip. But if you're preparing these souls for eternity, your personal holiness will be a direct counterattack, if you don't have it, to the preparation of these young souls. Don't ever harbor the idea that I can do some secret things over here that are not right and expect that it won't impact my classroom. It will. It takes the grace of God in our classrooms to be an effective teacher. And if we are lacking in our personal holiness, that will not transition into our classrooms. That will. If our lives are chaotic, our classrooms will likely resemble that. So some of the procedures we'll look at: personal life, preparation for the year, devotional time, preparation for classes, conducting classes, recess time, study time, disciplining, and checking schoolwork. Did any of you write down some procedures there on your paper at this point? If any of you have, just go ahead and call them out. Maybe you remember some that your teacher had. Very good. Raising your hands.
Yeah. Filing out of the room by rows.
Row one, row two, row three. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Or standing for prayer.
Standing for prayer.
Mm-hmm. Exchange of good morning and with all the four rooms.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Say good morning when you get together. Ask for permission. So why should we have procedures? We might not all be agreed that procedures are good. Maybe procedures are for those organized folks that we know of. You might have an individual that you think of, oh, he takes us overboard. But before we relegate all procedure to someone else, let's look at why do we do it. I don't know what these words mean to you. I'll go down through the list. BIBCUGES. The first one stands for biblical. They are a biblical concept, and we explored that a little bit already. That second one, I. They help to teach the importance of following instruction. The next one, D. They help to teach disciplines that will be needed later in life. How your students go about your classroom will begin transitioning them, preparing them for what they're going to do in life. Next one, C, they help to minimize confusion. Next one, U, they help to keep a group of people functioning as a unit. Next one, E, efficient. They allow for more efficient work, which results in more time for necessary things. G, they allow more freedom for you to be gone when necessary. Hopefully you won't need to spend much time out of the classroom, but when you do, procedures will be a great asset. Mm-hmm. Next one, S, they provide security for children. For as much as children seem to push the rules, that is their survival in the classroom. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how secure it makes them. And the last one, E, environments. They help to create a safe, secure learning environment. And I missed that one. That is a general overview. Anybody disagree with any of those? Let me know if you do at some point. But I think that is enough to realize procedures is for each one of us. When we go into our classrooms, we need procedures. One of the most important spots that procedures start are in your personal life. Remember, if your personal habits are in shambles, guess what your classroom is going to look like? Your classroom will be in shambles. So, looking at that, you got the rule. Rule number one there is pray. The number two there is composed of two letters that are badly warped, D-O. Number two is do, which could stand for procedures there. But pray for each student every day. That is partly why I developed the habit of taking a walk every morning. Just for the privilege of disengaging from what all the things I had studied and just think about the students and their personal lives and to pray for them before school began. It can easily get swept under the rug, and unless we make it a priority, it probably will get disregarded. A lot of these points have been covered in previous classes. I'll read over them quickly. Get your sleep. Do you think that's optional, or is that actually something that you need to do? A lot of us feel like we're the exception, myself included, and I think in retrospect you'll find it's not as optional as we like to think sometimes. But a good night of sleep will often improve your outlook. Get to bed in decent time and rise at a good time. Set a rising time. Read your Bible and pray a lot for them. Isn't it selfish to pray a lot for myself, but to neglect praying for my students? Spend time regularly with peers who aren't connected with school. Spend time with your students outside of school setting. Attend church and social functions. Exercise regularly. This one here is pretty important. I'm starting to understand that while exercising isn't as important as godliness, exercise is important in helping to develop godliness. Mm-hmm. Someone whose body is not fit, their minds begin to get sluggish mentally. Your muscles begin to get poor tone, and there's an outlook and a feeling that goes with that that just makes life so much more difficult to embrace properly. So make it a point to take a walk. If you're going to do a workout program, or it doesn't have to be exotic, just something that happens on a regular basis because you want your body to be in a good condition for school. And the last one there, read, to keep your reservoir full. I've went home many, many afternoons, discouraged slightly and just wondering, I just don't have inspiration. I'm just not inspired. Pull out a good book.
Yeah.
And an hour later, I can't wait to get back to school tomorrow and share what I've learned. If you're not a reading type of a person, I'm not sure what to say, other than maybe try to develop that.
Yeah.
That's an important thing. You're gonna be in 2 years who you are today, except for the books you read and the people you meet, is what I've heard said. I think that's true. Moving on, procedures in preparing for the school year. Make sure that all the correct school books are there. I'm pretty sure every single year I've taught, I've lacked at least a school book or two on my first day of school or had some last minute.
Mm-hmm.
Try to avoid that as much as possible. Get it settled beforehand. Scan the books that you're going to be doing to get a bird's eye view. Read the teacher's manual, the beginning. It's amazing how much that will help us to get ready. Don't hesitate to ask questions of former teachers. I would recommend, if you can, invite last year's teacher to spend a day with you in the classroom beforehand. If that's possible, ask them all kinds of questions and they'll be able to enlighten you on a lot of things. In your daily planner, plan at least, some were saying 2 weeks. I would maybe bump that towards 3 weeks, the first 3 weeks. Next, plan when you will complete the student material so that you can know you're getting it done in time. Don't get caught in the last month of school with too much work for your students to finish. Know where you need to be at by Christmas time so you know if you're at the right spot in your books. Plan meticulously what you will do on the first day of school. I usually do it down to the minute, the first 5 minutes, the next 10 minutes, the next whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You probably won't hit it, but at least you'll have that to go from as a perspective in knowing whether you're prepared. The last one, try to learn some things about each of your students before the first day of school arrives. Next one, procedures in devotional period. My recommendation would be have a schedule for each day of the week and keep a repetition there. Along with that, have a devotional theme for the year, such as maybe the fruit of the Spirit, a character study, maybe a book study going through the book of Exodus. There's going to be mornings you show up at school and devotions is just not ready. Do you know what the next thing is going to be, whether you studied for it or not? That's a huge help.
Mm-hmm.
Set something as a beginning activity that you do each day in devotional period. Always do Bible reading, singing, and prayer in each devotional. One of my favorites is recruit students to help you during devotions so it lightens your load of preparing. It's amazing how students actually love to do devotionals. At least mine did. I did every other week. One of my students would have devotions, and it's amazing to hear that student who you've tried to instill something in for so long, they have a wonderful devotions on that subject, and you know that they got it. Keep your devotions short and practical. Love your neighbor means when someone tags you, it means cheerfully take caught. And the last, end your devotional period with prayer. You'll learn a lot about students and their needs through that if you have your students pray as well.
Mm-hmm.
Procedures in preparing for classes. Know what lesson you're teaching. Very basic. I've too many times taught a lesson and then a student says, "Didn't we do that one yesterday?" Save yourself that embarrassment. Be familiar with how to do the lesson. Unless you've taught for quite a few years, it's going to take quite a bit of study your first couple years on each lesson to know. Reduce your lesson down to just a real simple thing. You don't have to teach every single point. Make sure they get one point really good. Because if they get one point really good, you did more than probably would have otherwise. If extra items are needed for class, ask your students to bring them the day before. That's an important clause, the day before. Have them stick a note in their lunchbox. I finally resorted to that. You need to bring this tomorrow. Okay, write a note, stick it in your lunchbox. That way when you're packing lunch the next morning, oh, I got to take this. Look ahead often so that you can have them bring those extra items. Think of practical applications of this lesson in the life of at least one student. So CJ, my student CJ, has rabbits. When you're teaching exponents or factorial there, does he know which one to use? To ask him how many rabbits he'll have in five generations if they produce at a certain rate. If possible, do outside reading on the subject. Our libraries are full of books. Just go ask the librarian, "Hey, I want a bunch of books on this subject." And come home with a book full and just go through and you'll have a lot of extra tips to tell them. If a lot of student reading is necessary, it might be wise to assign reading ahead of time. It's easy to skip student reading because oftentimes we usually have a slow student who takes a long time to read. Let's not neglect that. They need the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And try to think of a time in your life when this particular lesson may have applied. And Jonah did that yesterday, story after story of personal application to his teaching. Try to model that. You don't have to have amazing, wonderful fights at school to tell your students. Try to think of just everyday things that happen to you. That is sufficient if that's all you can think of. Procedures in conducting classes require promptness. I usually tried to, from the call for class time till the time they have their red pens out ready to checking, I aimed for 30 seconds. And I think that's reasonable if we all have our things together. Make sure the students know clearly what's expected of them. Are they expected to actually sit up straight? Then tell them and expect that. Are they expected to listen carefully, or is it an option to listen over there to the more interesting classmate? Have a policy about talking and a policy about nonverbal talking. That is where we run into trouble. Those students, they know how to communicate almost just as well nonverbally as they do verbally. Cut it all out, not just the verbal stuff. Make review interesting and fun. Think outside the box. Do it different today than you did yesterday, but do it. Be alert to how much they already know. Teach the lesson as necessary. Use the board a lot. A board is a good way to kind of keep interest. Ask lots of questions. And require board work of your students where it's possible. It's amazing how you can have class after class and send them up to the board and realize they didn't get anything I said. Practice oral reading. Next one, procedures in study time. Require a quiet classroom. Sometimes we don't realize how loud our classroom is. I've already, our school is very open from one room to the next, and sometimes all the other classes go outside, and all of a sudden it's so quiet, your thinking almost gets noisy. take time to just make a quiet classroom so there's no distractions. Require a signal before allowing students to speak. And it's not a raise of the head before they speak. It's something predetermined, whether a raise of the hand. It would be very helpful to do a elbows to ears hand raise. That way when they get older, they keep that. Have a system for how the students decide in which order to complete subjects. Little Johnny might do his spelling first on Monday morning just because that's easiest for him, when he really should be getting his math and English done for the day. Make a policy that only one student may be out of their desk at a time, especially in larger rooms. You will find crowds congregating at spots that are unhandy, if not. Limit student traffic in and out of the classroom. I tried various methods over the years. I think one of my most successful for going to the bathroom was you may go whenever you want as long as it's after that period's class time and as long as no other students are in the restroom. It seemed like that ended up working the best for me. Figure something out for you that works well. Teach students to find answers rather than just giving the answer. My policy is kind of that if a student comes up to my desk, it will take as long for us to work through together to find the answer as if he had just stuck to it and got the answer himself. That way they think there's no shortcut with him. I think I'll try a little bit more before I go up and spend the same amount of time. And then try setting amount of time where there will be no questions. That way you can do other stuff such as class preparation and checking or whatever you have to do. And the best part, procedures in disciplining. You can read probably 100 books on this. I will say the first two rules of discipline is seek God. God is the source of wisdom, and there's usually not a one-size-fits-all for all our students. There's just so much variety that the wisdom to discipline effectively requires a broad spectrum of wisdom in a lot of situations. And the second rule is be consistent. I feel like you can have a fairly broken rule system, but if you're consistent, you'll be ahead of the teacher that has the perfect rules listed that doesn't enforce it all the time. Mm-hmm. If you can enforce your rules all the time down to the minuteness of violations, you will have a classroom that is running smoothly and freely. But if all you check is you ignore something until finally it's too large and then you come down on it, that will cause confusion. Mm-hmm. Be consistent. Every time the rule is broken, every time there's consequences. If you don't like to do consequences, at least tell them that rule doesn't exist. You're allowed to do it. Mm-hmm. Decide your battleground. Make few and simple rules. Something like be kind. That will take care when Johnny reaches forward and smacks his classmate on the head with a ruler. There was no rule for that. But be kind cuts right through that. Johnny, you were not kind. Here's the consequences. There's freedom in simple and few rules. But do go ahead and make rules. Don't think that you can just avoid rules for this year. Communicate to parents promptly when there's infractions. If you're the parent, you will want to know how your child is doing in school. Do the parents a favor, just shoot them a note or a text, just, hey, this happened today. Just to let you know what's going on. Watch and wait if you're not sure about something. Sometimes there's things that you're not sure about. If it happened once, it will probably happen twice. So just prepared for that. Get help. You can contact your school board, talk to your co-teachers, call 1-800 Derek Overholt or Jonah Avina.
Or Jaden Shaw.
Talk to your dad. Whatever you do, get to the bottom. Don't be content to just, well, this looks hard, I'm just going to back out. Guess what? You have some harder things ahead. tremors and earthquakes usually build up until there is a major slip. Don't be that way in your school. Just deal with each thing as it comes. Consider a demerit or detention system. I think those things can be excellent things as long as you're consistent with it. There again, consistency is the key. Procedures in recess. When you go out to recess, make sure you have a game picked out beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go out to the field and then try to decide what game you're playing. Require a prompt selection. And game committees, I've found, are very useful. If I put one of my students in charge of first recess, they go get the student, ask them what the game is, and come down there with the supplies for the game. All I do is get out of my desk, go down there, they're all in line, and the supplies are there, the game is picked. However that works for you, try to make it organized. Require prompt participation. Believe me, if it's an option, some will opt out of the game. So you either decide, no, it's not an option to opt out, you play cheerfully and willingly, put your heart in, or then don't put a requirement there. And the teacher, you play too, if you can. Have a clear signal when recess begins and ends. And require prompt return to seats after recess. We have a 3 minutes down to recess field, 3 minutes back in. That's your allotted time. Next one, procedures for teacher checking. Have students organize your stacks of books and papers. Notice I said have students do that. The teacher has enough to do. I don't feel like a teacher needs to do that. Assign one of your students, divvy out all the work, and put it in the sequence you want it. Then you can grab it and check it start to finish without much hassle. And that would go with the next one. Ask students to hand books open to the lesson if you're using books. Set aside a specific time in the afternoon for checking. And arrange it, as I said before, so that you can do it start to finish without having to leave your desk to go get more books. Once you start, go through your whole stack, start to finish. Also have paper to check laid out. We talked that. What I like to do is throughout the day I have a paper and my teacher's manual open on my desk so that those 30-second clips throughout the day I can be checking on that. It's amazing how much we can get done in a day's time if we just hit 30 seconds here, 30 seconds there throughout the day. At the end of the day you checked maybe 10 lessons throughout your school day, whereas before you didn't check anything. Know what you need to check. I would recommend listening to Jonathan Erb's topic that he had here on grading, the theory of grading. I found that, here's a secret, that you don't actually have to check everything. I started doing that on my 9th year of teaching. So don't just stop checking, but dig into that topic more. I won't go into that much more, but all things need to be scanned, I would feel, but not all things need a grade necessarily. And put away distractions while checking. Yes, this includes possibly snacks, phones, laptops, and even good books. Anything that pulls your eyes off this checking, put it away. So those of you who were here, and I told the story about having 5 grades, 40 lessons a day to check, once a month going to Tennessee, putting in 11 hours a day of checking, 19 students, probably getting burned out. How would you deal with a situation like that? Someone recommended to me, I was going home at 6, they said, we'll go home at 5. I said, no, I have that much work to do. I need to stay there till 6 because I have that much work. I'm not choosing to go home at 6. They said, no, go home at 5. So I figured, well, chaos is going to be later or now, so why not do it now and then can prove them wrong. So I went home at 5 and lived a wonderful life ever after. I don't know what happens other than that we kind of fill our work to the expected time that we do. If you decide you'll go home at 4 o'clock, chances are you might actually just get done by 4 o'clock. So be wary of our humanity in that area. Just go home at 5 o'clock. Procedures for checking in class. Sometimes we'll bring students up to the class table or whether in their seats, however you do that. I would recommend having a system for who checks which book. The students will have opinions on whose book they get. And sometimes there's chaos and extra minutes wasted in that whole process. If Johnny knows his papers goes to Sally, then that happens and we're done. So figure out who's some kind of a system for that to work out. Have a designated color of pen for marking wrong ones. I tried to do something different, but I found out red is actually the best color because you can see it the best. There's no check marks get overlooked and some of that. So I would recommend using the red color. Require close attention from them. That does mean looking at you or the board when you're talking. Read answers without stopping for questions, unless all the hands go up and you know you started on B instead of A. Take time to answer the questions at the end. I would recommend what I have done, especially for older students, rather than answering their questions directly, have them look at their classmates' paper once they're over and check that. Sometimes once they see their correct classmates' answer, it solves the thing and I didn't have to answer that. Standardize the points. Always treat your points the same way. So if you have a sentence here and the whole sentence is wrong, I count a whole wrong. If I wrote to do and I counted 1 point for to do and 1 point for the underline, count it two wrong. So make sure your students know exactly how to count points before you start the lesson. Otherwise, they'll count it half wrong when you wanted it a whole wrong or however that works. And have points written in your teacher's manual. I would recommend going home and checking your teacher's manual. Do you have your points, the lesson points, written at the back? And please don't just write 32 PT at the end, because the next teacher won't know, is that for odds? Was it for all of A and B, but odds for C? Make it easy for the next teacher and write 32 points, all in A, B, and C, odds in D. That way the next teacher doesn't have to count it all over again. And in case you forget, you won't either. Free time procedures. What do your students do in free time? I don't have much experience with this. My students typically did not have much free time. I'm not sure it was something wrong with me or what. But things that they can do is read books, create something artful, study Bible memory. These next two are ones I would highlight. Write someone a note of encouragement or something similar. Could be a letter. The next one, write reports on countries, animals, or something of interest. I still remember a report I did on Madagascar when I was, I think, in sixth grade. I had no clue there was an island down south of Africa called Madagascar. And if you're interested in that, go look. But I still remember that. Have them pull out the encyclopedias and write just general reports on stuff. Have them look over their work, especially if their grades are less than 90%. There's always room for growth. And organize their desk. Some miscellaneous procedures. Read books. If you don't know what books to read, just start asking teachers around you. You'll find there's a lot of strong opinions on which books to read. I don't think you'll go very far before you got a handful that you need to read. Talk to other teachers. Other teachers love to give their wisdom. Attend midterm teachers' meetings if you have the opportunity. Jumping back to the talking to teachers, is I would recommend having some type of a regular teachers' meeting. However you work it out for your situation is great, but a regular time for teachers to get together and discuss their school, there's a lot of things a lot of good that comes out of that I don't think would come out otherwise. Just that togetherness and knowing what all is happening at school. jumping on down, if something isn't working, change it. If you can tolerate it, then go ahead and tolerate it and don't talk about it. But if you can't tolerate it, then decide that this thing will change and then do what it takes to change it. If it means flipping the whole world upside down to get it changed, go ahead and do that nicely and kindly. But either change it or then accept it as something you can embrace. Keep your school board in the loop. We shouldn't be asking, as us teachers are talking, we shouldn't be asking, so who's on the school board? It's a bad sign. Get objective opinions on things. Again, reach out. Sometimes in the moment, things can be heated, emotions can run, we can kind of be missing each other. You can make a phone call, talk to someone, get objective opinions. So I would have a question. Jonah, have you ever followed all these procedures in a given year?
I would say every year.
Every year you do?
Yeah.
Very good. How about you, Derek?
Well, every year I have procedures, but not all of these.
I mean, I shouldn't, but as far as a set of procedures applying to each of these things.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. So, we heard a little bit of a, what did you mean by that? That's good. You're going to develop a unique thing for your classroom. You're not going to be Jonathan Erber. You're not going to be some other teacher. You're going to be your own teacher. You're going to be yourself. And I would recommend just figuring out these procedures, these basic things, apply them to your situation. A teacher may over there may have an excellent program for his students, but it may not work so well for yours. So make sure that you pay attention to the results you're getting. If you don't like the results you're getting, the procedures you're using are not good. If you like your results, then keep your procedures.
You should maybe clarify the difference between rules and procedures as well.
The difference between rules and procedures. Thank you. That's a good difference. What is the difference between a rule and the procedure? Uwe, on his sheet that he handed out to each of the students, he said, consider these as goals, not as rules. Do you have thoughts on that? My brain's...
And this actually came from Uwe as well. A rule is something I will punish you for if you break it. A procedure is just the way we do things around here. And I will correct you, but unless you continue breaking that procedure intentionally, I'm not going to punish you if you check with a green pen one day. That's something I'll come to you and say that. Here's a red pen. I'm not going to...
Right.
Whereas if you push Johnny on the playground intentionally, that's going to end you up in getting some type of punishment.
Gotcha. Very good. Everybody heard that. Where rules are things that you will punish for. He pushed so-and-so over. Punishment. However, if they used a green pen, let's encourage them, hey, use a red pen next time. If that problem persists, yes, that will come to it. So, God bless you as you navigate the waters of your first year. As you figure out these procedures, be flexible with your procedures. Mm-hmm. I would say start your procedures on day one of the first hour of the first minute.
Amen.
And take time to work your students through those procedures, especially lower graders. Mm-hmm. If you spend your first day mostly going over procedures, I'm not talking about verbally with them, but actually reenacting scenarios that say, this is what I mean by these scenarios. If you look at the picture of the whole school term, you'll probably be farther ahead than if you would just ignore them and go in, well, I'll teach the procedures as we run into problems. You'll have a whole strung out problem range throughout the school year. So,
along with that, realistically, most students will, unless they have been in your classroom using your procedures, it'll take them about 2 weeks for it to really become natural. They know what's expected.
Right.
So be ready to remind them during that first 2 weeks. And just give the general reminders, you know, that stand in line for the drinking fountain. Wait until your row is dismissed, please, in classroom. Things like that. Line upon line.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification. Thanks so much for your good attention, and God be with you.